Latin, there's a word, ianua, I-N-U-A, that means door. And it gives us the root for the English word January, meaning that January is a way in which the calendar year stands as a door that is open. Well, for Christians, this liturgical year doesn't begin in January. It begins with the first Sunday of Advent, which we celebrate this weekend, meaning that this weekend is a door of sorts to a new liturgical year. Not only is it a beginning for the year that awaits us, but it also gives us an image that's very, very helpful for the season of Advent and a door itself. Every year as Advent begins, I think of a line from a great German Lutheran theologian, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He's got a line that is very helpful in understanding Advent, and I'd like to share it with you. He says, "A prison cell in which one waits, hopes, and is completely dependent upon the fact that the door of freedom must be opened from the outside is not a bad picture of Advent. A prison cell in which one waits, hopes, and is completely dependent upon the fact that the door of freedom must be opened from the outside is not a bad picture of Advent. Advent is a time in which we do all of these things. We wait. We hope, and we are dependent on something that we cannot give to ourselves, a gift that can only come from God and can only be received as pure gift. And if the gift doesn't come in this life, it is as if we are in a prison cell. As Advent progresses, this door begins to open. And when we transition into the Christmas season, there is someone who comes through this open door, someone that we receive into our world, into our lives, into our hearts. When it comes to Advent, this time of waiting, it's one in which we not only wait for Christ's coming, but there's a twofold meaning. There's a reality, a reminder, that we're also waiting for Christ's coming at the end of time, his return to us. We are actively waiting in this period of salvation history for his return. Today's gospel from the 21st chapter of Luke speaks to a sense of anxiety and uncertainty awaiting Christ's return, for this door to open and Christ to return to us. What sense do we make of this persecution that is laid out, this great period of struggle for humanity? I think there are two clues that are laid in this gospel. The Lord says on two different occasions to us that we should stand upright. What does it mean? What does it look like in the Christian life to stand upright, spiritually, morally, before others in the world? I'd like to offer two little images of those who live this out in their own way. One comes from the life of St. Thomas More. In 1535, Thomas More was put to death by King Henry VIII. He had been his chancellor for a number of years. He refused to take the oath of supremacy to Henry VIII. He was put in the Tower of London. He was tortured and ultimately beheaded. While he was in prison, he wrote a number of letters to friends and family members. In one of them, he says, "The times are never so bad that a good person cannot live in them." There's a way in which sometimes we think because of tides in the world that are unfavorable that we can excuse ourselves from the expectations of Christianity, the ways that we're raised to live, because of a failure that we see culturally or socially. But people like Thomas More remind us that there's no time in which it's not appropriate to stand upright in one's faith. This standing upright would have been the best way to meet Christ if we were his contemporary, if we lived his day, if we met him, if we encountered him. It's the best way to meet Christ in this day as we encounter him. And it's the best way to meet him when he returns at the end of time. Another figure that reveals in his own way this meaning of standing upright is someone who does it very, very quietly. And he does it during the season of Advent. St. Joseph is one of the most favorite saints in Christianity, and yet he's given almost no airtime in the Gospels. I go to visit the youth group here occasionally for a Q&A. They store up all their questions, And then they just unload them on me. And I went not too long ago, and I was expecting some of the controversial questions to come up. Some of them did. But the first question was not about any current event that's in the news. The kid said, why don't we know more about Joseph from the Gospels? Something that had bothered him and really turned this over. It's a good question, in a way. We don't know a lot, but we know enough about Joseph. Why is he a favorite saint? I think one possibility is that he's described in Matthew chapter 1 as a righteous man. In a way, that's enough. It's enough to know Joseph as the one who is upright in the world, before God, with Mary, and before Christ himself. If it's enough for Joseph, before God, to be righteous, if it's enough for us to know him as the upright man, then it's enough for us too to live the same way.